stared as Big F casually slipped the gun back in his waistband, as though he had just disposed of an irksome mole in a vegetable garden. Big F's men looked as stunned as Webb. Tuna's demise had obviously been on only Big F's agenda. Macy, however, just stood there, his gun trained on Webb. The sudden violent death of a colleague didn't seem to interest him at all. He was all cool and professional, standing there in a classic Weaver firing stance, his gaze riveted on the gun in Webb's hand. Webb wondered where the guy had received his training. Probably some paramilitary outfit staffed by ex-good guys who, for some reason or other, had slid to the dark side. With his hostage gone and multiple guns pointing at him, Webb dropped the pistol.
"Good help," said Big F to Webb. "I can't find it. I give my crew cash, clothes, cars, and bitches. Show 'em the ropes, teach 'em the business, 'cause I ain't be doing this shit all my life. Cash in my chips, lose myself till I kick living. And you think that makes 'em loyal? Shit, no. They just keep biting the hand that feeds 'em. Tuna making his own action on the side and think I ain't know it. Skimming dollars and dope off all the time. And he thinking I stupid and don't check that shit. But that ain't the dumbest thing he done. Dumbest thing the boy done is he be using the products. You put that shit in you, you talk to anybody about anything. He be high on that shit and he be mouthing off to a whole crew of DEA and his ass not even know it. Sell us all down the river. Well, I ain't going down no river. I ain't being no drug kingpin, working my business from the inside with no chance in hell of ever getting on the outside again. Uh-uh. No way, baby. No way. That ain't how it ending for me. I eat me some bullets before I go to Mighty Whitey's house."
He glanced sharply at his men.
"You just gonna leave Tuna there or what? Show some damn respect for the dead."
"What the hell you want us to do with him?"
said one of them, his arms spread wide, his features angry, though Webb easily sensed the fear he held for his boss. Webb was certain Big F could smell that fear, too. He no doubt counted on it in running his business. If he wanted to teach his people loyalty, they had one very compelling reason lying right there in a growing red pond. And taking out Tuna had probably been meant as a warning to Webb, too. Well, he felt incredibly warned. Big F shook his head in obvious disgust.
"I gotta tell you every damn thing to do like you a little baby or something? I smell me water and so can you. Throw his ass in the river and tie something to it so it ain't come up."
The men gingerly picked up their fallen comrade, bitching the whole time about getting blood and other tuna bits on their fine Versace. Macy stood in exactly the same spot. Apparently, Webb thought, he was inner circle and thus was allowed to stay for extra innings. When the others had disappeared down the trail, Big F eyed Webb.
"See what I mean about good help? Can't get none. Everybody wants to get rich overnight. Nobody wants to work for a damn thing no more. Start at the top. They all want to start at the top. I started at 8 years old running dollar bags of White Rock. Worked my ass off for over 20 years, and these brothers today be thinking they deserve every dime I got because they be doing this shit for a couple of months. New economy, my ass."
If Big F had been sitting in a maximum security prison cell wearing Hannibal Lecter ready-to-wear and Webb was safely on the other side of the bars, Webb might have started laughing his guts out at this capitalistic tirade. Yet right now, all he was wondering was when Big F would finally focus on the fact that Webb was an eyewitness to murder.
"Now Tuna, he must have killed 5 or 6 people, so I just saved you the trouble of frying his ass. Ain't gotta thank me."
Webb didn't. In fact, he said nothing. He probably could have made some smart remark, but witnessing the cold-blooded murder of another human being, no matter how much he might have deserved it, was not a great lead-in to humor for Webb.
"I guess everybody got trouble." Big F wiped at one of his eyes. "But the Lord done showered me with some extra helpings. I got me family coming out my ass and every one of them looking for cash. Got me a 90-year-old great-aunt I ain't even know I had coming round talking like this. His voice rose higher. Now, Francis, can't you take care of my eyes? Got me the cataracts, honey. Can't see to play the bingo no more. Do something about it for me, will you, honey? Used to bounce you on my knee. Used to change your shitty diaper. And I peel off some cash, and there you go. And she back a week later about a damn cat what got female problems.
He looked at Webb incredulously.
A fucking cat with female problems. And it only be $1,000, Francis, she says. That all it be, honey. And remember, I wiped your shitty diaper while your mama was down the river, or else shooting herself up with that little needle of hers. And you know what I do? I peel off 10 hundreds and give it to her and her cat.
The F stands for Francis? Big F grinned, and it seemed to Webb that he saw for the first time signs of little Kevin in this hulking, murderous adult.
Yeah, what did you think it stood for?
Webb shook his head.
No clue.
Big F took out a small box, unwrapped a pill, and put it in his mouth. He offered one to Webb, who declined.
Tagamet, Pepsid AC, Zantac, said Big F. I eat 'em like peanuts. Had me an upper GI done. Damn belly looks like a mole's been through it. This shit's getting to me, ain't no lie.
So why didn't you retire?
Easy to say, not so easy to do. Ain't like they give me a going-away lunch and a gold watch in my line of work.
Sorry to tell you, but the cops never stop looking.
The cops I can deal with. It's some folks in the business what give me the pain in the ass. They think if you want to quit working, you're going to rat them out. They can't understand why you'd walk away from a life like mine. Money out the ass, except you got to keep hiding it, and you got to keep moving around, and you're still always wondering when somebody, like maybe your bitch or your brother or your cat-loving great-aunt, is going to put a hole in your head while you're sleeping.
He grinned.
Now don't you worry about me. I'll be fine.
He popped another pill and then closely eyed Webb.
You one of them guys from HRT?
I am.
I hear you dudes are some serious shit. When you hit me the other night, boy, that hurt. That's rare, little man, let me tell you. That's rare. You guys must be some bad shit.
We're actually really lovable when you get to know us. Big F didn't crack a smile at Webb's remark.
So how come you ain't dead?
Guardian angel.
Now Big F smiled broadly.
Right, that's good shit. Tell me where I can get me one.
Big F shifted his bulk along with the direction of the conversation.
You want to know how them guns got in that building?
Webb stiffened.
You willing to testify to it? Yeah, I come on down to the courthouse. You go on ahead and wait for me.
Okay, how'd they get the guns in there?
You know how old them buildings are?
Webb's eyes narrowed.
Old? No.
Why?
The 1950s. I ain't old enough to remember, but my mama was. She told me.
Was?
Too much coke, not the soda pop. Yeah, 1950s. Think, HRT. Think.
I'm not getting it. He shook his head and looked over at Macy and then back at Webb.
I thought you damn feds all went to college.
Some colleges are better than others.
If you can't fly the shit in through the roof and you can't take it in the front door, what you got left?
Webb thought for a moment before it hit him.
Under the 1950s. Cold War, underground bomb shelters. Tunnels?
Damn, you smart after all. There you go.
That's still not much to go on.
That's your problem. I gave you something. Now you tell your folks to back off my ass. I ain't got no reason in the world to waste a bunch of feds. You go back and make sure they understand that.
He paused and rubbed some pine needles with his huge foot, and then he looked directly at Webb.
You guys ain't playing games on me and got Kevin but ain't saying, are you?
Webb considered how best to answer that. Ironically, given his present company, he decided that the truth was the best approach. We don't have Kevin.
See, local cops I don't trust as far as I can throw them. Too many brothers end up dead when the local cops get to them. Now, feds ain't worth too much in my book neither, but you guys ain't killing people for no reason.
Thanks.
So other things being equal, see, if you guys got Kevin, then I know he'd be all right. And maybe you boys just hold on to him for a while till this shit blows over.
The way the man was half looking at him, Webb could tell Big F really wanted Kevin to be in the custody of the FBI, where he would be reasonably safe.
I wish we did have him, but we don't. I'm playing it straight with you. Then he added, but I think Kevin might have been involved somehow.
Bullshit, roared Big F. He a kid. He ain't done nothing. He ain't going to no jail. No way is he. Not Kevin.
I didn't say he knew what he was doing. You're right. He's just a kid. A scared kid. But whoever took him is behind what happened. At least, that's what I think. I don't know why Kevin was in that alley, but his being there wasn't a coincidence. I want him just as bad as you do. And I want him safe, too. I saved him once in that alley. I don't want it to be for naught.
Right, so he can testify and then spend the rest of his life in witness protection. Some life.
At least it's a life, Webb shot back.
Big F and he had a prolonged stare down until the big man finally looked away.
I'm going to do everything I can to get Kevin back safe and sound, Francis. I promise you that. But if he knows something, he's going to have to tell us. We'll protect him.
Yeah, sure you will. Done a real good job of that so far, ain't you?
They heard the other men returning.
A name would be nice to go with the tunnels, said Webb,
but Big F was already shaking his head.
Ain't got none to give.
When the two men came into sight, Big F motioned to one of them.
Make sure the two-way in the car ain't working.
The man nodded, slid into the front seat of Webb's car, and fired two bullets into the government-issued radio, and then ripped out the handheld microphone. He also popped the ammo clip out of Webb's gun, fired the round that was chambered into the dirt, and handed it back to him. The other man pulled out Webb's cell phone from his pocket, ceremoniously smashed it against a tree, and then handed it back to Webb with a broad smile.
Ain't making him like they used to.
We gotta be going now, said Big F. And in case you're thinking about coming after my ass for pulling the trigger on Tuna, think about this.
He paused and stared grimly at Webb.
Anytime I want you dead, you dead. Anytime I want any of your friends dead, they dead. You got a pet and I want it dead, it dead.
Webb eyed the man steadily.
You don't want to go down that road, Francis. You really don't.
What? You gonna kick my ass? You gonna hurt me bad? You gonna kill me?
He unbuttoned his shirt and stepped closer to Webb. Webb had seen a lot in his line of work, yet he had never seen anything quite like this. The man's chest and belly were covered with knife wounds, bullet holes, thick, angry-looking scars, burn marks, and what looked to be tunnels of ripped flesh, badly healed. To Webb, it seemed like a painting, collectively produced by an insane world.
120 in nice little tidy-whitey years, Big F said quietly.
He closed the shirt, and his face held, to Webb's thinking, a look of obvious pride at surviving all that those scars represented. And right now, Webb couldn't deny the man that.
Big F said, you come after me, you better bring something to do the job right. And I'll still cut off your dick and stuff it down your throat.
Big F turned away, and it was all Webb could do not to leap on the man's back. Now was not Webb's time to settle this, yet he couldn't just leave it like this. He called after Big F.
So I guess you're grooming Kevin to inherit your empire. Your brother's son. I'm sure he's real proud of you.
Big F turned back.
I said Kevin's not your business.
We shared a lot back in that alley. He told me lots of stuff.
It was all a bluff, but a calculated one, if Webb was reading the signals right. Whoever had switched Kevin out might be Big F's enemy. If that was the case, then playing one against the other might not be such a bad idea. Webb was thinking that Big F was not above lying about not being involved, but that didn't mean the street capitalist hadn't done a joint venture with somebody else to knock off Charlie Team. If so, Webb wanted everybody. Everybody. Big F walked up to Webb and looked him over, as though gauging either his guts or his stupidity. "If you want Kevin back, I expect some cooperation," said Webb. He hadn't mentioned what Big F had told him. He figured Big F wanted to keep the information about the tunnels under the Target building between him and Webb, which was why Big F had sent the two men off to give Tuna a burial in the river. "Expect this," said Big F. Webb managed to partially block the blow with his forearm, but the impact of Big F's bowling ball fist and his own arm against his jaw still knocked him on top of the hood of the car, where his head smacked against the windshield, cracking it. Webb woke up a half hour later, slowly slid off the car hood, and staggered around, holding his arm and rubbing his jaw and head and cursing. Calming down, he discovered that his jaw, arm, and head did not appear broken, and he wondered how that was possible. He also wondered how many more concussions he could endure before his brain fell out of his head. And then Webb whirled and pointed his gun at the man who had just emerged from behind a stand of trees. The man was pointing his own gun at Webb.
"Nice try," said the man, "but your gun doesn't have any bullets."
He stepped forward and Webb got a better look at him.
"Cove?"
Randall Cove put his gun away and leaned up against the car.
He said, "That dude is one seriously dangerous person. Him blowing away his own guy like that was a new one even for me."
He looked at Webb's face.
"You're gonna have some good bruises tomorrow, but it's better than a visit with the coroner."
Webb put his empty gun away and rubbed the back of his head.
"I take it you had a ringside seat. Thanks for the assist."
Cove looked at him grimly.
"Look, man, I'm a fellow agent, undercover or not. Carried the same creds, took the same oath, worked through the same bullshit you do at the Bureau. If they'd tried to take you out, you would have known my presence. But they didn't, and so I didn't. If it makes you feel any better, while you were unconscious, I shooed away some brothers who came sniffing around your carcass."
"Thanks, because I'm not done with this carcass yet."
"We need to talk, but not here. Some of Big F's boys might still be hanging around. And this place ain't safe, not even for armed lawmen."
Webb looked around. "Where, then? They knocked your old office down." Cove smiled.
"You've been talking to Sonny, I know. I guess if old Sonny Venables thinks you're all right, you're all right. Boy's got a nose for bad meat, like the best hound dog I ever had me in Mississippi."
"There's a lot of shit going on. You been in touch with Bates lately?"
"We talk, but neither one of us is telling the other everything, and that's cool. I know where Purse is coming from, and he knows where I'm standing."
He handed Webb a slip of paper.
"Meet me here in 30 minutes.
Webb looked at his watch.
"I'm on special assignment. I've got to get back." "Don't worry, it won't take long. Oh, one more thing."
He climbed inside Webb's car and searched for a few moments before coming back out holding something.
"Satellite-based tracking device. Good as the stuff we use," said Cove.
"They've got a satellite," said Webb. "That's comforting."
"It's got a wireless communicator, too."
So Webb had been correct in deducing how they had relayed the directions to him after crossing over the Wilson Bridge. Cove switched the device off and pocketed it.
"Evidence is evidence. Surprised they didn't take it," he added before disappearing into the woods.
Sufficiently recovered to keep both eyes open at the same time and seeing only double instead of in gauzy triplicate, Webb put the car in gear and headed out. He met Cove at the mall downtown, at a bench near the Smithsonian Castle. When Webb sat down there, he heard a voice, but didn't react. All that had been on the paper. Webb reasoned that Cove was behind a set of bushes near the bench.
So Bates said he filled you in on me.
He did. I'm sorry what happened to your family.
Yeah,
was all Cove said to that. I found the news clipping at your house about you and Bates.
You are good. That hiding place has worked for years.
Why hide it?
Red herring. Somebody searching your house, it gives them something to find that really means nothing. Anything really important, I keep in my head.
So the clipping was just a dodge, nothing important?
Cove didn't respond, so Webb said,
Bates said you were on the butts of some big-time dealers, that they might have set up my team.
That's right. But this story is a long way from over.
And I heard Westbrook tell you about the tunnels.
I never figured that one. Good way to get the computers out and the guns in.
I'm going to fill in Bates on that one ASAP, and we'll go take a look. You want in?
Cove didn't answer, and it took a second for Webb to figure out why. Across the street, a man was walking by. He was dressed like a homeless person, was staggering slightly as though he were drunk, and he could very well have been both. However, Webb couldn't take any chances, and obviously neither could Cove. Webb reached for his gun and realized again that it was empty. He had a spare mag in the trunk of the car, but that was parked a good 100 feet away, and he had forgotten to get the ammo out, idiot that he was. As though in answer to his thoughts, Webb felt something slide next to him through the back support of the bench. He gripped the pistol that Cove had just handed him, whispered a thank you, and sat there, the gun held at his side, its muzzle following each move of the man across the street until he moved off.
You just never know what riffraff's going to come on by, Cove said.
Bates said that you might have been working through one of Westbrook's guys, maybe Peebles or Macy, and that they might have set you up.
Macy and Peebles weren't my inside connection. I think my guy was dealing straight with me, at least mostly, but I think he was set up.
So if the guy was shooting straight with you, any chance we can use him to get to the truth?
Not anymore.
How come?
Because my inside guy was Tuna.
You're kidding me.
Big F's guys skim all the time. That was just bullshit he was feeding you. He killed Tuna for the ultimate sin, working with the cops.
Did Tuna think there were others involved besides Westbrook?
Tuna was basically muscle, but he had some brains. I've been working with him for about 6 months. We nailed him on some small stuff, but he'd already done 4 years in prison early on in his career and didn't want to do any more. He told me about this new group coming in that was handling some of the local crew's distribution and even cleaning up their dirty money through some legit operations. The service didn't come cheap, but most of the crews apparently signed on, except Westbrook. He doesn't trust anybody that much. But even drug crews get tired of shooting each other up. And consolidation of operations and cost-cutting works just as well in illegal businesses as it does legitimate ones. I'd been digging deep on this group, but couldn't crack it. My undercover identity was as a point man for a drug crew looking to relocate from Arizona to rural Virginia. We'd heard about this group, and I got myself invited to look over their operation. At first, I thought it was connected to Westbrook's piece, but when I saw what was there, I knew it was big-time stuff.
Bates mentioned the OxyContin piece.
That's what makes this one special. I think the product this group was principally supplying the locals with were prescription drugs like Oxy, Percocet, and the like. Low risk and huge profit margins. Now, Tuna wasn't in the ops side of the business, but he seemed to think that too. It'd be a whole new paradigm in the district's drug trade. And this new group wasn't stopping at D.C. I believe they're moving the stuff up and down the East Coast.
Oxy started out rural.
Yeah, you heard of Rocky Mountain High? Well, this is Appalachian High. But the Appalachian Mountains touch on about 20 states, from Alabama all the way up to the Canadian border. And there's lots of room there to carve out a new homegrown drug empire on the backs of legitimate drugs.
That's why I called in WFO as soon as I realized the operation in that warehouse was a lot bigger than Westbrook. Now, I could have kept digging and maybe got some more stuff, but I ran the risk of them pulling out. I figured if we could get the bean counters to testify, we could bring this whole Oxy crew down. Man, I look back at it now, and you know what I think? That it was too good to be true? You got it.
Cove stopped talking for a moment.
Look, Webb, I'm sorry what happened to your guys. I never in a million years smelled the setup. But I'll take the responsibility because it was my screw-up. And I'll sacrifice everything I got left, even my life, to make it right.
What you do for a living, I never could. I don't know how you guys do it.
Funny, I was thinking the same thing about you. Now you go to those tunnels and figure out how they got that stuff in and out. And maybe you'll see something that'll tell you who. And I'm not thinking that it's Westbrook. There's somebody else out there, having a nice laugh at our expense.
You got any firmer thoughts on that?
I'm still feeling my way. Whoever it is, they are wired in tight somewhere important, because they seem to be able to keep one step ahead of everybody.
Wired tight to who? Somebody at the Bureau?
You said it, I didn't.
You got proof of that?
My gut. You listen to yours?
All the time. I take it you feel like the odd man out.
What, you mean everybody and their brother thinking I turned traitor and helped burn a bunch of my own? Yeah, it has occupied my thoughts of late.
You're not alone there, Cove.
Hey, Webb, we're blood brothers in a way. Branded traitors for something we didn't do. And some people just don't want to hear it.
Is that why you're not coming in?
See, the bottom line is, I got taken, snookered, suckered, whatever you want to call it. I'm no traitor, but I messed up. That's almost as bad as jumping sides in my line of work.
We are blood brothers then, because I did the same damn thing.
Well, maybe we'll both be standing at the end of this dance. What do you say?
I say I'll give it my best shot.
Keep your head down, London. These mothers shoot low.
Hey, Cove.
Yeah?
Apology accepted.
Webb drove to DuPont Circle. He grabbed a spare mag for his pistol from the trunk and put the gun Cove had given him in the rear of his waistband. Bates had long since gone home, and Webb decided he would wait until morning to contact him. The guy could probably use a good night's sleep, and those tunnels weren't going anywhere. Instead of checking out another set of Bucar wheels, Webb decided to do something really crazy. He was going to go get his very own car. The press army wasn't parked outside his house anymore, yet Webb still did not take any chances. He entered the house from the rear, slipped inside the Mach, opened the garage doors, and eased the car out, its lights off. He waited until he was down the street before he turned on the lights, then he stepped on the gas, all the while looking in his rearview mirror. Nothing. He headed back to East Winds. Chapter 34. When Webb got back to the carriage house, Romano wasn't there. Webb even checked the antique cars downstairs in case his partner had crawled into one to admire it and had fallen asleep. It was almost 4 o'clock in the morning, and his partner was probably prowling around outside. As a sniper, Romano had been restless with too much natural energy, despite all their training to take things slow and methodically, unless drastic circumstances dictated otherwise. Yet when it was time for action, just about everybody took a back seat to Paul Romano. Since Webb's cell phone was out of operation, he used the phone in the house to call Romano and breathed a sigh of relief when the man answered.
"So how'd your appointment go?" asked Romano.
"Boring. I'll fill you in later. Where are you?"
"Everything was secure, so I've been poking around the place. There's an old watchtower on the west side. See for miles in every direction."
"I know. I've been there."
"Well, I'm there right now. Felt like a little jog."
"That's a bit of a hike, Paulie."
"Walk in the park. You might want to come out here and bring out a pair of NVs.
What are you spying on?
You'll see.
Webb left the carriage house from the rear, slipped on his headgear, attached his ambient light source night vision binoculars to it, powered up and fixed the relief to his eyes. The world instantly became an ethereal, fluid green. You couldn't use the contraption for very long because the goggles were heavy enough that you would get a piercing pain in your neck, followed by a headache that would make you forget the neck ache. Webb always kept one eye closed when scanning through the goggles, even though this distorted your depth perception even more. If you didn't keep one eye closed, when you stopped looking through the goggles, all you'd see would be a brilliant orange ball in each eye. And at that point, a 90-year-old in a wheelchair could get the drop on you. As a sniper, one had to use various pieces of equipment to get the job done, from high-tech to the lowest tech of all, camouflage. Webb coveted his ghillie suit, a concoction of burlap and cordura material that he had patiently covered with animal excrement and other foul substances to allow it to blend into a rugged forest or jungle environment. Each HRT sniper gave his ghillie his own personal stamp, and Webb had spent years improving on his by defiling it even more. The ghillie had been originally designed by the Scots over 400 years ago in the course of waging countless guerrilla wars against those seeking to conquer them. It worked just as well now as it had then. Webb had lain under his ghillie in the middle of a jungle in Central America with dope dealers toting submachine guns walking all around him, and they never knew Webb was there until he stuck his gun in their backs and read them their rights. He moved forward again and pushed and then clicked the NV to IR status, which caused an internal light source to come on and vastly intensified the field of vision. Webb wanted to make sure the equipment worked, for NV goggles batteries were notorious for failing right when you needed them to work. He didn't like to use the IR for very long because it had one major drawback. For anyone watching him with night vision goggles, the IR magnifier gave off a light beacon, like a large flashlight in one's face. Webb would be a sitting duck. He clicked off the IR and put the headgear away in his backpack. He would rely on merely his eyes from now on, something he had done with every shot he had ever taken. Sometimes you couldn't improve on nature. The air was crisp and the sounds of the farm and surrounding woods many and varied. Webb set a good pace and he covered the ground to the watchtower in enviable time. It was good to know he was still in decent shape. After 8 years of relentless training, you didn't lose it all in a short period of time, he reasoned. He liked the forest in the darkness. It felt as comfortable to him as a lazy boy in a big screen TV would to the average American male. He sighted the watchtower and stopped. Since he didn't have a cell phone, Webb put his hands up to his face, formed a rude bugle of sorts, and let out a call, the same signal he and Romano had used when they were sniping. It could either be a gust of wind or a bird commonly found just about anywhere. Webb was sure Romano would remember, and a few seconds later he heard the answering message. All clear. Webb broke from the tree line and hustled to the watchtower, gripped the wooden rungs, and climbed silently up. Romano greeted him at the little hinged door in the floor of the observation space. Webb knew Romano couldn't see Webb's fresh injuries, courtesy of Tuna and Big F, and that was just as well, because he didn't want to waste breath right now explaining them. And of course, Romano would give him a hard time about it. He could just hear the words, "Shit, you let them do that to you?" passing through the man's lips. Webb looked at Romano as he pulled out a 10-power Litton scope that was normally attached to a .308 sniper rifle.
"Anything good on?" asked Webb. "Check this out, right through that break in the trees to the northwest."
Webb looked through the scope.
"I take it I'm looking at the Southern Bell. Interesting stuff going on for a horse farm."
Webb adjusted the scope to his eye and sighted through it. There was indeed a nice break in the trees, which revealed a fine view of the neighboring spread. There were two sizable buildings that looked relatively new. Large trucks were parked next to them, and Webb watched as men with walkie-talkies raced in different directions.
A door opened on the side of one of the buildings, and Webb saw that whatever was going on inside required a lot of light. A tractor trailer was backed up to a warehouse-type roll-up door, and men were bringing large boxes out on hand trucks and rolling them up inside the truck's trailer.
"Something big is going on," said Webb. "Auto chop shop, drugs, stolen aviation parts, spies, technology pirates, or lots of other things. Damn. Fascinating neighborhood. And here I was, thinking Virginia horse country was just a bunch of old duffers riding around drunk chasing little foxes while the little women had tea in the afternoon. Boy, have I got a lot to learn." He looked at Webb. "So what do you think?"
"I think with all we got going on, the Southern Bell will have to keep. But if something pops, at least we'll be right here to do something about it."
Romano grinned, obviously happy with the thought of coming action and possible mayhem.
"Now you're talking my language."
Chapter 35. Kevin Westbrook had filled up all his sketchbooks and was now sitting and staring at the walls. He wondered if he would ever stand under sunlight again. He had grown used to the sounds of the machinery and the water running. It no longer affected his sleep, though he regretted growing used to this condition of his imprisonment, as though it were an omen that those conditions would become permanent. The footsteps reached his ears over the other sounds, and he retreated to his bed like an animal in a zoo cage as visitors approached. The door opened, and the same man who'd visited him earlier came in. Kevin didn't know who he was, and the man had never bothered to tell Kevin his name.
"How you doing, Kevin?"
"Got a headache."
The man reached in his pocket and pulled out a bottle of Tylenol.
"In my line of work, I always got some of this handy."
He gave two pills to the boy and poured him out a glass of water from the bottle on the table.
"Probably lack of sunlight," added Kevin.
The man smiled at this.
"Well, we'll see if we can do something about that soon."
"That mean I'd be getting out of here soon?"
"It might mean just that. Things are rolling along."
"So you won't be needing me no more?"
As soon as Kevin said this, he regretted it. That statement could certainly cut both ways. The man stared at him.
"You did a pretty good job, Kev. Real good, considering you're just a kid. We'll remember that."
"Can I go home soon?"
"Not up to me, actually."
"I ain't say nothing to nobody."
"Nobody like Francis?"
"Nobody means nobody."
"Well, it won't matter, really."
Kevin instantly looked suspicious.
"You ain't hurting my brother."
The man held up his hands in mock surrender.
"I didn't say we were. In fact, if things go okay, only people who need to get hurt are going to get hurt, okay?"
"You hurt all them men in that courtyard. You hurt them dead."
The fellow perched on the table and crossed his arms over his chest. Though the man's movements weren't threatening, Kevin drew back a bit.
"Like I said, the people who deserve to be hurt are the ones who get hurt. It's not always that way, you know that. Lots of innocent people get hurt all the time. I had me enough lessons on that, and looks like you have too."
He eyed the wounds on the boy's face. Kevin had nothing to say to this. The man opened one of the sketchbooks and looked at some of the drawings.
"This the Last Supper?" he asked.
"Yep, Jesus, before they crucified him. He's the one in the middle," said Kevin.
"I went to Sunday school," the man said with another big smile. "I know all about Jesus, son."
Kevin had drawn the painting from memory. He had done it for two reasons, to pass the time and for the sheer comfort of having the Son of God close right now. Maybe the Lord would get the message and send some guardian angels down to help one Kevin Westbrook, who desperately needed some type of intervention, divine or otherwise.
"This is good stuff, Kevin. You're real talented."
He looked at another picture and held it up.
"What's this of?"
"My brother reading to me."
His pistol on the nightstand, his men outside the room with their own guns, his brother Francis would put a big arm around Kevin
and draw him close to his massive chest, and they would sit and read far into the night until Kevin would fall asleep. He would awake in the morning, and all the men would be gone, and so would his brother. But the place they had stopped in the book would be marked. It was a sure sign that his brother intended to come back and finish reading it to him. The man looked surprised.
He'd read to you?
Kevin nodded.
Yeah, why not? Ain't nobody ever read to you when you was little?
No, he replied. He put the sketchbook back on the table.
How old are you, Kevin?
10.
That's a good age. Your whole life ahead of you. Wish you had me that.
You ever gonna let me go?
Asked Kevin. The man's look managed to cut Kevin's hopes right to nothing.
I like you, Kevin. You kind of remind me of me when I was little. I didn't really have any family to speak of, neither.
I got my brother.
I know you do, but I'm talking about a normal life, you know. Mommy and daddy and sisters and brothers living in the same place.
What's normal for some folks ain't normal for everybody.
The man grinned and shook his head.
You got a lot of wisdom in that little head.
I guess nothing about life is normal when you get down to it.
You know my brother. He ain't somebody you fool around with.
I don't know him personally, but me and him do some business together. And I'm sure he ain't somebody you want to fool around with. And thank you for the advice. But the thing is, we're working together right now, sort of. I asked him real nicely to do something for me, having to do with that Webb London fellow, and he did it.
I bet he done it 'cause you told him you had me. He doing it 'cause he don't want nothing to happen to me.
I'm sure he did, Kevin. But just so you know, we're going to return the favor. Some folks real close to your brother want to cut in on his business. We're going to help him out there.
Why are you going to help him?
Kevin asked suspiciously.
What's in it for you?
He laughed.
Man, if you were just a little bit older, I'd make you my partner.
Well, let's just put it this way. It's a win-win for everybody.
So you ain't answered my question. You gonna let me go?
The man rose and went over to the door.
You just hang in there, Kev. Good things tend to happen to patient folks.